All righty, hour number three of our radio program. That's right, it is a Zach Gelb show on the Infinity Sports Network. Fun show so far. We led the show talking about how Baker Mayfield is underappreciated, and it would have been nice if his head football coach in Todd Bowles would have matched his intensity last night. Didn't like the decision by Todd Bowles to not go for two and to kick the extra point when he had a chance to basically put his team in position to win the game. Maddox Madsen, the quarterback at Boise State, did join us, and they are having big expectations, not only Ashton Jeanty trying to go win the Heisman Trophy, but also that team. They are ranked 12th in the country right now, and they have the inside track on being that one non-power conference champion representative in the college football playoff. We obviously recapped the trade deadline and just talked about some of Micah Parsons' comments as well, saying the fat lady has not been singing yet on the Cowboys season, even though it appears and it feels like to me that the Cowboys season is pretty much already over and not a lot of optimism with the Dallas Cowboys. But we got a trade deadline to recap, and we'll do so in a few moments with the former NFL general manager, Thomas Dimitroff from Sumer Sports, who's ready to go and joins us right now. Thomas, always great to have you on. Appreciate you doing this once again. How you been?
Zach, what's up, man? Everything good?
Yeah, everything's great. I can't complain. You know, I'm watching the game last night. There's a lot of things that I could comment on. We'll get to the two-point conversion or what didn't happen in a bit. But I'm watching this game, and I'm like, DeAndre Hopkins, here we go. He's just popping off. He gets the two touchdowns, and I'm thinking to myself, how do the other GMs that are contending allow him to go to Kansas City for a conditional five that turns into a four? Like, if you were a GM on a contending team, even if you didn't need a wide receiver, wouldn't you just do it so he didn't go to Kansas City?
That's a great point. I mean, what is he, 10-plus receptions now? Adding to, like, this powerhouse. I get what you're saying. I don't know what you could do. Could you head him off in the pass and not let him get there? That's maybe what you could do. Maybe try to do the flat tire thing. He's going there, right? They're, Brett Veach, look, brother, Brett Veach is really good at what he does. They're putting together what they need to do and get another power guy in there. I think he's got another, I don't know, 2 or 3 years. I don't know where you are with that. He's a special receiver still. I do believe it.
Yeah, no, I still think he could obviously play in this league. And, you know, you find the fountain of youth. You know, we saw the Patriots for all those years bringing all those guys that look like their career was shot. You know this. And then you get to play with Tom Brady and magical things do happen. But, like, I don't know. Like, you've been in those conversations. Do you have a player? Like, isn't Tennessee calling the other team saying, hey, Kansas City's about to give us a conditional five for a four. You just give us a four straight up and boom, you get DeAndre Hopkins. Like, that's the way that I look at it from afar.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that going on. Now, some people aren't as creative with that. I mean, I know Rand Carthon well. He worked for us before. I don't know what their approach is there, right? They might have slow played it in a certain way. Some people don't like people, GMs, to be talking about their business. So there's a little bit, hey, I don't want this out from the next team, whatever it may be. So you kind of have to be aware of doing that, right? Even though it sounds right to approach it the way you're doing it, some people are really particular about the secrecy of their deals.
Thomas Dimitroff here with us. I love what the Commanders did today. They had a need. You know, this team has overachieved this year. And sometimes when you overachieve, teams just stay put. The Commanders were like, nope, we're going to be aggressive. And I think they send a good message to that locker room that we got a lot to accomplish this year by going out and acquiring a player like Marshon Lattimore.
I love the approach. This is quintessential Dan Quinn, right? They are not just a team that's saying, hey, we're building well and we have a few wins and we like where we're going. Let's add this guy. They are building for now and they're building for the future. And I love the momentum here. We know what's going on the offensive side. Defensively, 20 EPA, like, they're not the best on the defense. Even though they're fourth or fifth in sacks, they need coverage help. They bring a guy like this in, injuries aside, potentially. This guy's legitimate. I know they gave away some legit booty, brother. That's a third and a fourth. I know they got something back. You know, Adam Peters is going to have to answer to the owner, basically, and Dan Quinn. They would go to the owner in a situation like this, Zach, where they'd say, look, we're giving away really interesting pick compensation, but we're getting a guy that can be a difference maker. Even though there may be some corners in the draft coming up that are, you know, maybe better value, they are not necessarily the players that this kid is. And I think it was a smart move. Continue to build with some really good, smart veteran talent. I love what they did.
Now, from afar, it's easy to just say, hey, they got the quarterback, Jaden Daniels. They have a new owner. That just uplifts that organization clearly from where they are. But I'm happy you bring up Dan Quinn, you know well, from the time that you guys worked together in Atlanta. What makes him a coach that's capable of turning a team around that quickly when you just get away from the quarterback and having a new ownership group in there?
Yeah, I think a guy like Dan Quinn comes in. He is all about positive, passionate, and persevering through and through. Alliteration, I know, brother, but that's what he is. He loves boxing. He loves fighting. He loves being in a spot where they had to kind of build themselves out of where they were. And I think he came in there knowing that it was a little bit downtrodden, and he was going to take his true passion and his true energy, and he was going to instill that in his team. That is what Dan has done. You know that. People believe. There were a lot of people throwing darts early on, like, do they have the talent to win more than half the games? It's very clear, and I know it was Dan Campbell who said it recently, not Dan Quinn, but I am sure Dan Quinn is saying inside the building, we can beat any team in the National Football League. I believe he believes that because that's his mentality, and I think that's what the team is believing. There's so much belief in a quarterback, and they have people rising to the challenge, right? The running backs are running hard. I love where they are right now. That is Dan through and through. He's authentic with his team. And they see that he's willing to go the distance for him.
Yeah, and you know what? It is a feel-good story for someone that doesn't have a dog in the fight. Because you know this, right? You could have a really good career in the NFL with what happened in the Super Bowl. That's a moment that everyone's going to think about when they look back at careers. To see Dan kind of have like this good start and restore how people believe in him and acknowledge that, hey, this guy's a good head coach. It's a feel-good story with what happened in that Super Bowl.
But he surrounded himself with really good football coaches. And again, people can throw their darts on a coordinator that over the years they weren't sure, you know, where he was going. But obviously he's come in. They paired very well with an excellent athlete, probably a rare athlete, a guy that can make the throws everywhere. We know all that. So he feeds off of that. I just think Dan has been really good, along with Adam Peters, in taking it all in and capitalizing where they're good. And now making a move like this, showing everyone we are not looking back, we are looking forward, and we're riding this momentum train. And that is, again, DQ.
Thomas Dimitroff here with us, now with Sumer Sports, you know, was a great general manager in the NFL for a bunch of years with the Atlanta Falcons. I look at the Detroit Lions. To me, pound for pound right now, they're the best team in football. I know the Chiefs are undefeated. Their offense is awesome. We talked about this last time you came on. They needed to go get a pass rusher. They weren't able to get Max Crosby. Didn't seem like the Raiders were interested in trading him, but you get Za'Darius Smith. I think it's a low risk, medium size reward for a defense where you don't need that defense to be great. You just need them to make timely stops and make a few stops with how awesome your offense is.
Yeah. To lead off, I don't know if Mark Davis is going to allow me in his suite. I was so outspoken about having him move Max Crosby, and I said it because I have a great belief in that guy because I think he's such a difference maker. So they're very fortunate to keep him there. That's great. When you talk about Za'Darius Smith and going to Detroit, I was hoping Trey Hendrickson was going to go there as well. What an idea to bring in a legitimate pass rusher. I'm saying that Za'Darius is obviously in a different spot in his career. He's a 6-sack guy. What is he? Does he pull off another 2, 3, or 4? Maybe. The way that defense is playing and the way that they're being coached, you never know what's going to happen there. When I first started talking about Za'Darius going there, I was thinking, is this a little bit different, but sort of same with Matthew Judon and what the Falcons did? They're getting a guy who's 30-something, but he's playing some good football, and he's got 6 sacks. You know, Judon, I think, only has 1.5. So I think there's for that team right now to bring in someone, I think it sent also a message, Zach, to the team, similar to Dan Quinn. We have everything in front of us here. And as long as we have one of the best offensive coordinators in a long time, that's my pitch, of course, for Ben Johnson. He's not going to be there next year. They better ride this train as well. Let's get Za'Darius in here. Let's continue to grow here, right? Meaning let's get our defense growing. Maybe their star guy comes back. Didn't they say he could get he
for the
might
Super Bowl,
heal if
potentially.
They got to the Super Bowl?
Yeah, that's what his family threw out there to a local radio host, Stoney, who's been there for a bunch of years. But hey, I think the Lions will be in the Super Bowl. And I'm not questioning the heart and determination of Aiden Hutchinson, but it's one of those things. No one wants to have your star pass rusher hurt, but I'll kind of believe he returns when we actually see it this year.
Well, that's a great point. And back to Zadarius, last thing, Zach. I think it's always important for the team inside the locker room, as well as the fan base, even though as GMs, we like to say we don't do anything for the fan base because we're myopically thinking about what to do right. Everyone needs to be realistic about what Zadarius is bringing to the table, right? He's not coming in. They're not expecting another 8 or 9 or 10 sacks, right? Let's know that he's there. He's going to be really good to help them in certain ways, but let's not get out over our skis thinking that he's going to have massive amounts of sacks. And if it doesn't happen, you know, Brad didn't make the right move. Brad Holmes, I'm referring to. Yeah. Of course, they made a good move here.
But let's just be real. I don't care what he does in the regular season. Just go be vintage Zadarius Smith in the postseason. That's how you win this trade. That's, to me, all that matters for this Detroit Lions team. Wrap it up with Thomas Dimitroff. Does a great job now with Sumer Sports. So you mentioned Ben Johnson. Everyone thought he was going to be the Commanders coach last year. Obviously, he took himself out of the running to be a head coach, and he wanted to go back to Detroit. It seems like a foregone conclusion now that he's going to be the next coach of the Bears, which I think would be a tremendous hire by the Bears with a young quarterback like Caleb Williams. What are your thoughts about Johnson potentially being the next head coach of the Bears?
Well, look, I hate to project into a team, of course. I mean, to your point, this guy, he was on everyone's top of everyone's list. And what I was thinking recently, I had this conversation. I don't remember the exact number, Zach. Wasn't it 20 million? He's going to be raising his hand like, look, it is what it is. I have a lot of money coming my way. And if you all want to get in the sweepstakes, you are going to have to nut up and be legitimate on the money they're putting out there. It will be, he's going to take over a team. Now, he's a very smart guy. He's not going to come in there and be without the ups and downs of a head coach. He's going to make sure he surrounds himself with the right people, the right coaches, right? I think that's really important. And if it happens to be Chicago, it will be really interesting to see how he pairs with Ryan Poles, the general manager there.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. Like, a coach like Belichick, obviously, we know is the standard. Vrabel, established. When you're a coordinator, and we've seen a lot of hotshot coordinators before that get praised and go on to be great, and we've also seen others be disaster. Like, as someone that's a part of the hiring process, how do you get a read if a coordinator is going to go on to be a great head coach?
Well, I think there are so many elements that you're interviewing when you're looking at that guy. It's not just the fact that he's almost on the lines of brilliant. I don't throw those words around that easily, but he is very special, and we know that. You also have to look and see what is his true leadership talent and his prowess to take men and bring them into the battle, so to speak, and let them, you know, help them be the best that they can be. That's something that we don't know yet, right? Through all the interaction with people, you take all of that in intelligence and all of the creativity. This is where it's important for him to make sure that he gets the right staff around him, especially in those early years, Zach. And that's a big thing. When you're talking about putting together a staff, it's not just sitting back as a GM and an owner and saying, okay, young coach, pull your staff together. Everyone comes into the interview, by the way, Zach, with a list of who they think are the best coaches to be on their staff. You and I know that's not realistic. They might get 30% or 40% of that staff at the most. So it's really important to drill down on these other factors that you're not sure about to see if that guy is the full package guy.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think you've ever worked with him. So is it just what you've been seeing from afar, what he's done in Detroit, or is it just people like friends in the league telling you how much of a rock star this guy could potentially be?
You're right. I have never worked with him from afar. He's got a lot of positives in a lot of different ways. It again is, where is it when everything hits the line, how he factors? That's not just through the interview, as you know. It is the feedback from a lot of people and the players' feedback as well. And that's going to be an important thing. Again, it's imperative that you're surrounding a head coach that comes in like that with the right talent. They have a really, really good group of talent there. You know that without getting too much into the Bears. So if you're projecting in a situation like that, it's good. Like, you want a young quarterback to have the right people around him. I think you want a young coach who is really smart with the right personnel around him. And I think they have a legit chance. Look what happened last thing with Matt LaFleur when he goes to Green Bay, right? He's heralded as one of the better coaches in the league right now. Coming in, people weren't sure where he's going to be that way.
Sure.
Surrounded with the right people. Brian Gutekunst does a great job with him, helping him build the team, and I think that's important.
Last thing I'll ask you, Thomas Dimitroff from Sumer Sports. So Belichick, I think, will be back next year. Vrabel, I think, will be back next year as a head coach. We talked about Ben Johnson. I think he's going to be going to the Bears. I'm fascinated by Brian Flores, and I know you know him, but he's doing a kick-ass job with the Vikings. You know, he did a good job in Miami. Obviously, him and the quarterback had issues. I know you have the issue with the lawsuit right now with the league, but if I'm an owner, and let's say you get, what, six, seven, eight jobs that could potentially open up once again. We already know the Jets are open. We already know that obviously the Saints are open after yesterday. Like, I'm seriously considering hiring Brian Flores, and I would be disappointed if he doesn't end up getting a job in this cycle as a head coach again.
I would be disappointed as well. I mean, he's kicking complete butt there, right? I love watching his defense. I know that there's going to be some people throwing their darts about how he handled things and how he handled some of the personalities. I think when head coaches get their next opportunity, they sit down. Brian is a very smart, a thoughtful person. So he's going to look at all the things that he did really well. He's going to look at the things that were challenges. That's what Dan Quinn did. Dan comes back in and he's looked at the things that needed to be adjusted. I am sure back to Brian, when he gets that opportunity, that he's going to look at things with a really clean lens and he's going to be smart about how he approaches his football team.
Yeah, and you were around Belichick. I'm not saying that he's going to go on to be Bill Belichick, but you know, the Browns job wasn't his finest work, even though he did win a playoff game there. And then look at the coach that he turned out to be getting a second opportunity as a head coach.
Well, we know Bill, you know, arguably is one of the top three coaches ever in the history of the world in football. Talking about Lombardi and we're talking about Paul Brown. He is right up there. And, you know, this isn't just Mike Lombardi's ratings, even though I respect Lombardi's ratings. He legitimately is that. He's going to come back in. He's going to turn an organization around. We all know that. I said it time and again, and you guys get sick and tired of me hearing it. I don't think there's another coach out there that can bring you to the Super Bowl in the next 3 years like Bill Belichick could. That's my take.
He is Thomas Dimitroff from Sumer Sports. Tell us about all the latest you guys got cooking with Sumer Sports.
Hey, look, we are so focused right now. We have a number of really good NFL teams who are our clients. We're doing some NCAA work as well. So we're pulling everything in. We're growing. Last time we probably talked, we probably had about 40. We're about 65, 70 strong data scientists and designers and systems people. We have five former general managers on our staff. So we have a really strong evaluation staff that provides us with our IP. And we're really excited about what we're doing with all of our algorithms. I say this to anyone. You come in, you supplement properly with the data that's out there, and you're a good or a very good football man. I think it takes you to a completely different level as a team builder, as a GM, and a head coach.
Last one, because I actually lied to you. I said like last question two or three questions ago, but one more thing popped up into my brain. Travis Hunter at Colorado, you know, if the team that has the number one pick that doesn't need a quarterback is picking one, he could be the first overall pick of the draft. We know he plays both ways. What would kind of be your evaluation of him and how you would view him as a player? Like, do you play him as a corner and as a wide receiver, or do you think that teams will ultimately make him pick one or the other?
I think, you know, he's going to come in there, obviously, with his background with Deion, and he's going to feel like that's where he should go. I think a team's going to come in. They're going to focus on the one position that he might thrive in, and they'll sprinkle him in at the other position early on until they realize that he could thrive in both situations. Obviously, he's a rare athlete. He's got a presence about him, and it was fun to watch. And look, he's from just up the street here outside of Atlanta, and so I think this whole city is watching closely to see where he ends up being. If you think, in fact, he's going to go one of the top three, it will be interesting to see who lands him, because he's going to do special things for him athletically for sure.
He is Thomas Dimitroff from Sumer Sports. Thomas, appreciate it as always.
Always. Thank you, Zach.
There you go. Thomas Dimitroff joining us on the show. I also love, by the way, I think it was when we were talking about Ben Johnson. He was like, someone's got a nut up for him. I've never heard a guest say that, but I absolutely love when Thomas Dimitroff joins us, and I got a good chuckle out of that one. All righty, we will take a break. We'll come on back. We'll do a little overreaction, proper reaction. It is the Zach Gelb Show.
Another NFL week is complete, which means it's another week to freak out about your favorite team. Help! 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 Which takes are truly crazy.
But sometimes a game can be so bad, it's almost good. You know what I'm saying?
No. And which are so crazy, they might be right.
He's 6'5", he's 245 pounds. He's probably a Popeye's biscuit away from being a tight end.
Zach let you know in this week's edition of Overreaction or Proper Reaction.
Stu, I'm going to ask you this question first in Overreaction, Proper Reaction.
Okay.
As we know, the Raiders have fired offensive coordinator Luke Getsy yesterday, And today, reports surfaced that longtime OC and head coach North Turner will join the team as an assistant. Today, Zach Gelb's best friend, former NFL general manager Mike Lombardi, and former QB, some guy I actually like, and Rich Gannon, had harsh words about Antonio Pierce.
I mean, it's really not good. The product on the field is bad. The fans are frustrated. They've had enough. They want to fire everybody. You know, at some point, you have to look at the whole operation. I'm hoping that that's what's going to happen at the end of the season. I can't imagine that Antonio Pierce will be back next year.
Mark's got to make a decision. It needs to be a complete remodel, and Antonio Pierce isn't qualified to remodel a living room, let alone a franchise worth $8 billion.
Hey, Mike. Why are you qualified then to give an opinion with how you were as a GM with the Browns? But I won three Super Bowls in other places. Overreaction, prop reaction, Stu. The Raiders should move on from Antonio Pierce.
He has not been perfect. He's made a lot of mistakes this year. I don't think he's done a great job, but I think that's an overreaction. I think they've done this too much where they've had a coach for a year, year and a half, and they move on too quickly. I think you give him a chance with hopefully a quarterback of the future and a better roster in the coming years.
So I will agree with you. I will say it's an overreaction because the question is the Raiders should move on from Antonio Pierce. Now, if the question was, will the Raiders move on from Antonio Pierce? It's different what should happen and what will happen. Do you think they will move on from Antonio Pierce?
I still think they won't, but I think the chances of them actually doing it is more likely than should they do it.
Here's why I think they will. And I didn't even consider this yesterday when we were talking about potential coaches that could get fired. I just thought Pierce would be back, right? You know, you don't usually, I know we've seen some one and dones, but you don't usually see it happen a lot. Remember when Rich Gannon joined us in the offseason and I threw out there the possibility of Devontae Adams getting traded? And he gave what felt to me like a very team response, like, why would you want to get traded? The grass is always isn't green on the other side, and who knows how much longer Aaron Rodgers could be playing in this league. I think Gannon being so adamant about Antonio Pierce, either he doesn't like Antonio Pierce, which I'm not saying that Rich Gannon can't dislike someone, but Rich Gannon's a really good dude, like really likable guy, or he knows enough people in the organization where they're like, hey, this is a disaster. Like, even though people know we're just bad, it's even worse than what's getting painted and showed to the outside world. So since Gannon had such a strong take about it, Stu, I kind of think that there's a lot of legs to Pierce getting fired, and I would lean more he does get fired than he doesn't.
It's interesting. He does seem to be very plugged in, I feel like, Rich.
And even with how many times there's opportunities to trash the Raiders, like, I feel like with them, he doesn't always do that. That's why when he does do it, it's kind of like the antenna's up, the eyebrow definitely is raised. All righty. Now you could start to, to ask me the questions. I almost read you the second question. I'm like, that's not how this is supposed to work.
Well, speaking of the Raiders, Tom Brady, he was officially approved as the Raiders minority owner with a lot of...
I think he's the best minority owner in football already.
Okay.
I'll just say that. I haven't really evaluated all the minority owners in football. You know, Magic Johnson may have a thing or two to say about that with the Commanders, but all right, we can continue.
Obviously, there's a lot of strict stipulations that he cannot criticize officials during his Fox broadcast. However, on Sunday, Brady has some harsh words about the refs and the league for ejecting Brian Branch for an illegal hit.
It's going to happen. You wish they wouldn't, but the reality of the sport is these guys are playing hard. They're trying to get their team an aggressive style of play.
Whoa!
Wow.
So they just threw out Brian Branch, who's one of their best defensive players, and that came from New York. Wow!
I don't love that call at all. I mean, obviously it's a penalty, but to me, that has to be serious intent in a game like this.
All right, well, today the league announced that Brady would not be fined for his comments. Good. So overreaction or proper reaction, Brady should have been fined for those comments.
Should have? Overreaction. See, the NFL doesn't always usually use their brains, but I'm glad that they did here. Like, to me, if you're criticizing the officials, just saying, I don't like that call in a very monotone voice doesn't warrant like a suspension. If Brady got in front of the microphone and was like, that zebra is a moron, he's an idiot, he's a dope, it's one of the worst calls I've ever seen in the history of the NFL, I would appreciate that as a listener. But then knowing those are, all right, I'm fine throwing then a penalty flag on Tom Brady. But just saying, oh, I don't know about that. I don't like that call. Like, if that's the case, then the guy can't be a broadcaster. But I'm glad, like, just common sense played out with the NFL, which usually never follows common sense. Because if Brady got fined for that, hey, he could afford it, right? We know that. He has a $375 million deal with Fox, and we know how much money he made during his playing deals, even after doing the admirable thing and taking all those discounts for all those years. But yeah, I have no problem with Brady not getting fined for that. If that's the case, then just hang up the microphone and walk away. Like, seriously. Next question.
There appears to be a major rift growing between Bears head coach Matthew Eberflus and the players, or at least with one player, and that is Captain DJ Moore. Now, after Moore's lukewarm, quote, "I want to say no," end quote, response if Eberflus has lost the locker room, video has surfaced of Moore literally walking off of the field in the middle of a play while Caleb Williams scrambled for his life. After the game, Eberflus seemed to have played dumb when asked about it.
I'm not sure the exact play, but I do know that one play that he stepped out of bounds. And I think the side judge threw his hat out. He was out. So I believe that's what happened. Again, I'll have to watch the play specifically, but I think that might be the play you're talking about.
So are they taught to, in that situation, just stay off the field then from that point on, just to eliminate any confusion?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what it was.
So overreaction or proper reaction, the Bears should strip Moore of his captaincy after the video.
So basically, one side says he's hurt. Other people are questioning the effort, right? That's tough. Here's the problem with DJ Moore. Even though he signed an extension and he's a good dude, I just don't think he wants to be there anymore. And I talked about this. He was so outspoken in having Justin Fields as the quarterback. Now, having Caleb Williams over Justin Fields is a better option. But he was so outspoken about that. So how are the two of those guys going to mesh? How are they going to gel? And now you have not only this situation, but you have the situation where I think he's speaking for Bears Nation, where they're like, hey, has Matt Eberflus lost the locker room? And he goes, I want to say no, which is basically him saying yes. I think this is just a bad situation. And when you have the wrong coach in place, yes, you would expect leaders to uplift, but I think it's a tough thing to do. I'm not going to sit here and advocate with this being a very questionable video and not knowing which way I really signed it that the Bears should strip him of his captaincy after the video. So I would say that's a slight, I could see the side of it, but I'd say that's a slight overreaction.
All right. And last night's loss to the Chiefs, Bucks head coach Todd Bowles decided to go for an extra point and the tie at the end of regulation rather than going for two and a chance to beat the two-time defending Super Bowl champs on their home turf. So overreaction or proper reaction, Todd Bowles should have gone for two.
You know, here's what I realized in the last 2 days. People are really bad at arguing. Like, horrible. So yesterday, I do this whole rant, which I've done like 3,000 times, about James Franklin at Participation State University. And some guy, some jabroni, some clown, you know, try to go all Jason Kelsey-like, on Twitter, basically goes, well, who would you hire if you get rid of him? You know, I don't hear a good name out there. And then any name you give isn't good enough. Like, last year in October, I was advocating for Kalen DeBoer to be the next head football coach at Penn State. He ended up getting the job at Alabama and had Washington a national championship game. So the other day, I'm like, oh, Cignetti. That was the first name that I thought of. And they're like, oh, well, why would he leave Indiana? Because it's Penn freaking State, all right? It's not like Indiana is this great job, Indiana football. They're a basketball school, even though they've been rock stars this year in football. And here's the other thing. It's not like there needs to be a slam dunk name out there in order to move on from James Franklin. Like, how many young coordinators, like the Georgia defensive coordinator, who knew Dan Lanning was going to be this great coach when he got to Oregon? So it's like this idea that you can't fire James Franklin because he's good, not great, is jackassery to me. And then in this case, here's why this set me off today. Well, Zach, even if Todd Bowles goes for two there and they get it, do we really think Mahomes isn't going to get them into field goal range? And I know it's easy for me to say, well, they didn't get into field goal range when they had the ball in a tie game. But yes, like, obviously, no bleep, Sherlock, can you have a situation where you go for two and then Mahomes walks right down the field and gets a field goal. it's still a chance right there where you put yourself in a better situation than what happened to go win the game. And Bowles after the game sounded like a dope. And that's a Temple guy me going after here. When he's just like, oh, well, considering the situation with how wet the field was, that's why we thought kicking was better. Like, huh? So you want your team to do so many more things in wet conditions instead of just 2 yards out trying to score after you just put the ball in the end zone. So you asked me Todd Bowles should have gone for two? Yeah, proper reaction. That's just people. Learn how to argue better. And I hate that we put ourselves in, oh, well, what happens if this happens? What happens if that happens? Give me another name. Or you know, well, what happens if... Okay, fair questions. It doesn't mean that the first part was wrong. Doesn't mean that the first part was wrong. All right, ask me the final question.
All right. Houdeh Nason is on the prowl after starting the season 0-3. The Bengals have won four of their last...
Who did you say?
Houdeh Nation?
Oh, Houdeh. I think you said Hoosier Nation. I'm like, is this an Indiana question here?
Oh, no.
Gotcha.
College hoops has started. The Bengals, they've won four of their last six.
Oh, so this is for the Bengals, not the Saints.
Yes. Houdeh, not Houdat.
No, I understand. I'm just having fun.
Four of their last six to improve to 4-5, and they sit ninth in the AFC, just one game behind the Broncos for the final playoff spot. Now, up next for Cincy are the Ravens, then Chargers, then the Steelers, and then the Cowboys, three of which are on the road. So overreaction or proper reaction, the Bengals will make the playoffs.
And this is in the now, what I think right now.
Yes.
I think that's an overreaction. You go win on Thursday night against the Ravens, I will change that stance. But the Bengals have to show me a little bit something more than just beating the Raiders, stink. The Giants, stink. Browns, stink. Panthers, I'm just doing this for my guys, Mac and Bone and WFNC, suck. You know? Like, those wins stink. So go beat a really good team in Baltimore. Where last time, your quarterback threw for 5 passing touchdowns and it still wasn't good enough. You lost the game in overtime. So I got to see more out of the Bengals before I say they make the playoffs. So that will be an overreaction. Alrighty. That will do it for overreaction, proper reaction. We'll come on back. We'll talk a little bit about what to look for tonight's election. I'm sorry, not election. Trade deadline already passed. College football playoff rankings. That's what I'm looking for. We'll do that on the other side. Update time. Here is the Ackman, Rich Ackerman. All right, wrapping up shop. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. So I know everyone's awaiting tonight for the big results. And that, of course, is the College Football Playoff Committee is going to have their rankings come on out. It's not Donald Trump or Kamala Harris. Soon I'm going to get phone calls. Zach, why are you talking politics on this show? I'm not talking politics on this show. I'm not a dummy. I know sometimes I sound and look stupid, but I'm not stupid. I know the college football playoff rankings tonight are so irrelevant. Number one, it's 12 teams that get in. So it's not the same buzz and exuberance that there was with the rankings when it was 4 teams that get in. And also, I think on most people's minds, obviously, it's tracking of the election tonight. Now, Stu, I have a little predicament here.
Ooh.
During the show, and I'm not a political guy whatsoever, but I enjoy the coverage on election night when you got that Kornacki guy going nuts. And also, I've enjoyed the debates because I don't really have a dog in the fight. I'm not really a political guy. I'm not Democrat. I'm not Republican. I pick the person who I think is in the best interest of leading our country, right? That's how I do each and every, 4 years or however, you know, when you go through the process. But I think it's funny to just watch the coverage, and I enjoy watching the coverage. And I understand it's very serious for a lot of people, so I don't want to come off as, like, disrespectful. But with all that being said, I got invited tonight to a steak dinner with a good friend of mine, and he is bringing a very famous person with him to said dinner. Now, the dinner is at 8 p.m., should go for about 2 hours or so. Now, I don't know if we're even going to know who necessarily wins tonight anyway, but then I'm going to miss the majority of the coverage. Do I go to the dinner? This is like getting invited somewhere on Super Bowl Sunday. It's like, do I go to the dinner or do I watch the election coverage? Just wondering. I think I know what I'm going to do here.
I I think it would help if I knew who the person was, but
okay.
Is it like an A? Like, how big of a name is it?
Top 100 basketball player of all time.
Okay, that's pretty big.
Yeah. Top 100 basketball player of all time. I know the person that has invited me to this dinner. I don't know, like, I know who the basketball player is, but I'm not friendly with him. So it was just funny when I got a text right before the show, hey, call me at some point during your show. I have a dinner that I want to invite you to tonight. Do you want to try to guess who the basketball player is?
Sure. Patrick Ewing.
It is not Patrick Ewing. More present day. More present day.
Okay.
It's a good first guess.
Vince Carter.
Close.
Tracy McGrady.
No. Good guess, though. We've had T-Mac.
Allen Iverson.
Before. Not Allen Iverson. You're getting colder. You are getting colder.
Jason Kidd. No, he's a coach. That'd be
tough. Not Jason Kidd. Well, the NBA is off tonight, right?
True.
So
yeah.
It's not a terrible guess. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, no, this guy's a top 100 player. On that list that they did, he had to be. Oh, it was top 75, was it?
Yeah, they did a top 75.
Oh, did he? Yeah, he had to have.
Chris Webber.
No, you're getting colder. New York roots. Yeah, he is. He was. What do you think? Come on. You're
New
close.
York roots.
New York roots. I could sing a song that would give it away. You want me to sing the song?
Yeah, I'm drowning here.
I'm coming home.
Oh, Mello.
Coming
okay.
home.
That's right. I forgot
Tell
you made the top.
The world
yeah.
that I'm coming home.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I got an invite tonight from a buddy of mine. And he goes, hey, I'm going out to dinner tonight with Carmelo Anthony. I want you to come. I'm like, why the heck do you want me to go? I go, yeah. He goes, are you interested? So I told him, it is election night. You know, I always got to set it up as if even when someone's doing a solid for me, hey, you know, I may have plans, but it is election night. You know, a lot of coverage. It's also two blocks from my apartment, the steakhouse. So I'm going to go. I'm going to go have dinner tonight with Carmelo Anthony and eat some steak that's out of my dime. So I appreciate that invite.
Sounds like a great night.
So if you are a friend of mine that's listening, you have my cell phone number. That's a friend of mine, not just someone random. You know, if anything crazy goes on in the election world, feel free to drop me a text. I'll be like, hey, Carmelo, pass the shrimp cocktail and the steak with the steak sauce. Oh, by the way, this just happened in the election. So I have no clue what I'm going to talk about with Carmelo Anthony, if I'm being honest, but definitely down to go to that dinner tonight. Okay, college football playoff rankings, come on out. Here's going to be the confusing part about these rankings still. So I guess from what I gather, they're going to give the top 25. But like, for example, let's say if Ohio State's 3 and Oregon's 1, they then have to give the bracket. Because the way that it works, for people that aren't familiar with this, 5 conference champions get automatic bids to the college football playoff out of the 12 teams. Only 4 get byes. So how the rankings are and then what seed it translates to is, I think, going to be a little bit confusing to explain. It's like you got to give out the rankings and then you got to just put the bracket out there for the 12 teams right afterwards. Here's what I'm fascinated by. I am fascinated by Alabama, because in the AP poll, they're in 11. Will they be a top 12 team? I'm also fascinated by how the committee is going to rank Indiana and Penn State, because Penn State's 7-1, Indiana's 9-0. Like, I think Indiana, like when I do Take 5 Wednesday tomorrow, I will have them higher ranked than Penn State, but I don't think the committee is going to put Indiana in front of Penn State. But always remember, these shows are done to get a reaction. I know they're supposed to be true rankings, but the rankings right now on November 5th mean nothing. They mean nothing. So I'll be curious what the big talking point is this time tomorrow. If I had to take a guess, not what should happen, but what will happen, I think Oregon, when you put it into the bracket, not the rankings, I think Oregon will be your first conference champion, right, from the Big Ten. They'll have a bye. Then Georgia will be your second conference champion from the SEC. They'll have a bye. Miami, they won't be ranked number 3, but they'll be the 3 seed because they will be the ACC winner right now. BYU won't be ranked 4, but they'll be the 4th seed because they'll be the Big 12 winner right now. After that, I think Ohio State, once you get past the top 4 bye spots, Ohio State will then get the 5th seed. I think Boise State will be the 12, and Boise State will be the conference champion from the non-Core 4, Power 4, whatever you want to call it, ACC, Big 12, SEC, and Big 10. I then think Texas will get the sixth seed, and I do think the committee will put in Alabama because they beat Georgia, but they had two losses, right? They lost to Tennessee, who will be in, and then they had the bad loss to Vanderbilt. But I do think they'll just put Alabama in. So I have 11 Alabama going to number 6 Texas. Then I have 7 Tennessee hosting number 10 Notre Dame. Now, Notre Dame could be bumped up a little bit, but they did have that loss to Northern Illinois. But I think, right, if Notre Dame gets in with the loss to Northern Illinois and then Alabama in, even though they have two losses, with the loss to Vanderbilt, that would be like the committee basically just trying to cancel it out, like, you know, in a weird way. And then I have Penn State 8, not what should happen, but I think will happen, Penn State 8 hosting 9 Indiana, which even though I was against this 12-team format, and I'm still against it, I will say if those are the matchups on the, I know it's not the wild card round, but the first round, that'd be pretty damn good. Boise State at Ohio State, because Boise State lost to Oregon by 3, Ohio State lost to Oregon, Alabama at Texas, hello, sign me up for that. That's going to be fun. Notre Dame at Tennessee, and then Indiana at Penn State. Oh, boy. I would be the biggest Cignetti fan up against that fraud, James Franklin. So that will do it for the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We will be back tomorrow. Braden Fisk is going to join us from the LA Rams. Also, Hot Take Hickey. I don't know how we book him each and every week. He's going to join us in studio. We'll react to the college football playoff rankings. We will not react probably to the election. And we will have a kick-ass show, do a little Take 5 Wednesday tomorrow, my top 5 teams of college football in the NFL. All right, talk tomorrow, everybody. We out. Bye-bye. Peace.